Women, you are the queens of our nation, the mother of our home, the pride of our children, a light always left on. You are refined in your ways, a woman of substance, substantially fazed by her everyday conscience. A conscience to live in a way that uplifts not just her home, but the home of her brethren. Styled as a graceful woman on her throne, empowering lives to be filled with pride, hope, love, beauty, nourishment, soul, faith. Bring your ears closer now and your mind will explode and be inspired by the words of Cover Mode. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Cover Mode. This is the fifth batch of episodes that I'll be bringing to you to keep you informed, excited and inspired by the beauty of the modest lifestyle. I'm Rashan Isaacs and in my role as country manager of the Islamic Fashion and Design Council, I aim to create avenues for our South African modest wear designers to grow in both a local and global scale, to celebrate and support the achievements of our designers who are getting it right and leaning on those designers to share with you their experiences, their designs, and their knowledge. It's been a busy few weeks in the fashion industry as we've just come out of the SA Fashion Week and heading into the rescheduled African Fashion International Fashion Week this weekend, happening right here in the mother city, Cape Town. Today we talk about the modest runway, and I've invited designers whose modest wear designs have been seen on our local runways and recently also an international runway. Nazifa and Warda Safi of Modish graced the SA Fashion Week runway with their autumn winter 2016 collection, a collection that was inspired by their heritage as both South African and Afghanistan background, and that was back in 2016. And on the line, we have Taslim Bulbulia of Bulbulia Threads, who has over 20 years of fashion industry experience and also promoted covered couture on the AFI Fashion Week runway in 2016 as well. And recently, in fact, at this, she's currently also there. Recently, she showcased at the Asia Islamic Fashion Week in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia and sponsored by the Islamic Fashion and Design Council, and who is currently still, like I said, in Malaysia. And we are graced with her presence as well on the line. Assalamu alaikum to my guests in studio, Wada and Nazifa. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And then I'd like to call in Taslim Bulbulia. Assalamu alaikum, Taslim.
Wa alaikum salam, Rashan. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. I'm so glad to hear you. You know, you have no idea what excitement it has been to watch your show all the way from South Africa and to see those images, you know, being posted. I think you would have seen on Facebook, on Instagram, social media was just a flutter of excitement just seeing a local or our South African designer on an international platform. Mubarak to you for that as well. It looked absolutely beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And then also we have Warda and Nazifa in studio. They've also been very busy. They have a ready-to-wear range as well as a, would we say, couture range? A couture range. And we've seen the couture range mostly on the runway. But I believe they're also itching because they've been seeing all our modest wear designers also, you know, appearing on the runway. How has your, you know, the modest runway, how important is it to be placed in a mainstream runway?
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, listeners. As designers, both Wada and I always felt that modesty is a big thing. Like modesty, not even just modesty, modest designers are quite huge. And alhamdulillah, we live in a country, we also live in a city where we are blessed with so many talented people around. And I mean, as the years go by, I'm sure we as women, we all love fashion, we all watch these fashion shows, and we see all these designers on mainstream fashion. And modesty is one thing that modest designers is one thing that it lacked. So we felt, and I'm sure many people feel, that it is quite important that modest designers make a way onto the mainstream, into mainstream fashion.
Taslim,
I think from my side, because I've always been a mainstream designer, I just felt that, you know, that there are so many options for mainstream, but not very many options for modest wear.
Mm.
And that's why I decided to go in that direction, even though for the past 20 years I've had a very modest clientele, private clientele. And I just thought it was the right time to be seen on Fashion Week, just to be to make it accessible to people, you know, so they don't feel like they need to. Most people will shop from the ordinary general stores are always looking for ways of covering up what they're already buying. And I think what we as modest designers do is offer them a ready-made option where you don't have to go look for an inner or a jacket or a cover. Mm. It's already done for you. And I think that's why it's appealing to a lot of people.
And do you think that it's only been recently accepted on a mainstream platform?
I think so. I mean, for me, I would still say that more than half my clientele is just everyday people. They're not Muslim people. I think that when you reach a certain age, modesty seems to be there for most women. I think when you pass a certain age, you kind of become more self-conscious or aware of what you're wearing. But also that mainstream now doesn't offer much variety. I mean, everything just follows the same trend, and everybody doesn't fit into those categories.
True. And I think they also realize that the category of modest wear is huge. And like you've said, it's not only your Muslim, you know, it's from different faiths, cultures, and sometimes just the person wanting to dress a little bit more conservatively.
And also, I think Taslim can continue.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you know, a well-loved brand in Cape Town was Hip Hop Clothing.
Yes.
And I freelanced for Hip Hop years ago. And that's what I actually learned there, because their market was just an older, more conservative person. Mm-hmm. And then we would amend the fit, adjust things accordingly. And that wasn't aimed at specifically Muslim women. It was just aimed at women. And I think, you know, when we speak modest, that's why I say I've got clients from every faith, every walk of life, but they prefer to dress in a certain way, and that's what we offer.
Assalamu alaikum to the listeners. I would have to agree with Taslima when she speaks of, you know, females reaching a certain age and then they feel that they would like to dress a bit more conservatively. But through our experience, especially having showcased at SA Fashion Week, it almost felt like it was always there, even amongst the youth and even amongst young females. But it's almost like they needed that permission to, you know, come out there and be like, you know, we are modest dressers, we love modest fashion, and we can also be part of what mainstream fashion is about. And since that time, and it's been a rise in the last few months, or say probably the last year or two, where it's, for lack of a better word, trending. Like, it's people are so proud and so confident to be modest fashionistas, which is it's such a refreshing thing to see and to be part of.
Would you agree with me then that it's also the appeal to the modest wear consumer who's never had or been you know, had the access to a platform that embraced the modest you know, designer, and now that mainstream sees the possibilities or that how big the the modest wear dresser or consumer requires this, it's now become more and more and more, you see it everywhere, from Anissa Hasibuan on New York Fashion Week to a London Modest Fashion Week actually being created by Horti Elan. That it's now, and I mean, when I look at statistics from Thomson Reuters, Muslims worldwide spend an estimated $244 billion, and that was in 2015, and that was only on apparel, and that accounted for about 13.56% of the global Muslim consumer spending of 1.8 trillion dollars. And you know, the numbers keep going up. And if you think that this is only the Muslim consumer, you add on the non-Muslim consumer as well, and you're looking at $300 trillion. But with the Islamic economy growing in at nearly twice the rate of the global economy, spending by the Muslim population on clothes is expected to grow by $322 billion by 2018. So these
are
all
the corner.
Exactly. It's you know, but we've been doing everything for the last couple of generations. And we recently, just off air, we spoke about skills within our Muslim, you know, environments, like beading, embroidery, and we really don't want that to be lost, because it really came from our elders.
Yes, no, definitely. And that's the type of skill and talent that you start to find is dwindling a bit. So you try and, like, you know, capture it and try and use it to its full potential. I mean, I know for my sister and I, that is part of our business model, and it's always been part of our business model, is how can we hone in on those particular skills. And you'd be surprised at the amount of skills you find in, like, disadvantaged areas, and they don't get recognized. Many a times people are using well-known how can I say, fashion houses to run up their work, where there are people in disadvantaged areas that are so skillful.
And they work impeccably.
Their work is absolutely flawless. And this is coming from, like, the two of us going through back and forth of CMTs all the time, to finding the ones that we are using now, alhamdulillah, they are just, we can't compare them to
anything. And I mean, these are individuals that are self-taught.
Yeah.
That haven't been through fashion school or design school at any point in their lives. They were self-taught. And I mean, the amount of knowledge that they hold is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I believe, sometimes I was telling her, that people who go to fashion and design school, you can learn so much just from them.
Yeah.
So much. And this comes from experience also.
Yeah. And experience is an education in itself.
Yeah.
Tasleem, you know, when we look at international runways and more the Islamic fashion weeks, like the one you've just graced your collection on, that's the Asian Islamic Fashion Week. What is the difference? I mean, it's obvious that it's Islamic, but, you know, having been on a local mainstream sort of runway to a modest Islamic runway, what has been your experience?
Well, I mean, Islamic fashion is massive in Malaysia, in Indonesia especially. I've met so many designers. They've been doing it and they do so well. And then they've also had a few British-based designers, designers based in Abu Dhabi, in Dubai as well, showcasing. And even some, Amjad came from Paris as well. So it was very interesting to see, because, you know, we all have a different aesthetic, but we're all trying to achieve the same thing. And you also notice that, you know, there are different things that are acceptable in different cultures.
Yes.
So modesty is so broad. And it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly what it is. So for me, it was a great learning opportunity as well. And it was also a trade event, which was probably the best part of the whole event, is the fact that it was a trade event. And so you get to meet buyers from different regions. It was the first inaugural event, so the turnout wasn't as wonderful as they expected it to be. But I mean, even based on that, I managed to get a client from the Philippines, believe it or not, because there's such a big growing Muslim community there, but there isn't access to a lot of halal fashion. So, so it's amazing, because when you come to places like this, you know, it's the norm. That's what a fashion show is. It's modest. When you come from the West, you know, it's very different. They were extremely strict. I mean, everybody has to wear a skull cap, a black inner, black stocking.
Saw that. Yes. I noticed your turbans over the full cap.
Yeah. It was a little bit tricky, so I couldn't. I had sandals from a friend of mine, a designer in South Africa, but we couldn't use them because of the pantyhose. That wouldn't look right. You didn't put them on.
Well, but that's a great experience. Yeah, and, you know, that's why with 20 years of experience in design, in the design industry, you still learn all the time,
yeah,
right?
Learning,
all the time. All the time. But because you're in a different climate, in a different culture, in a different everything, it's good to experience that because you kind of understand and you also learn a lot. I mean, I bought things just out of curiosity to see how it's made, how does it function, what do you do with it. And it's amazing because, you know, everybody here wears it with pride. They had the first prime minister come to inaugural the opening. It was quite, you know, a lot of pomp in the ceremony and that type of thing. And then I met Diane Palangi, who's such a huge designer over here. And it, you know, it was good to see what their aesthetic is, what they like. They do like a lot of bling.
a lot of color embroidery.
All Asians. Yeah, so it was interesting. And my stuff was quite well received, so that was a positive.
And in terms of preparing for this, I know it was really tight your schedule, and because we'd been in conversation prior to this, but in terms of preparing for fashion weeks, whether local or international, you know, what goes into that preparation? I can imagine, I mean, it's a different, it's not your client, you're doing it for media, marketing, buyers, it's a different arena completely. Mm.
I think from my side, I have to first clear my schedule with my private client to buy any time to extend my collection. So mine was rushed in a 4-day marathon.
Sure.
We started on Thursday and we left on Monday, so it was quite hectic. But for me, it always starts with fabrication. I think I spoke to you about this before. Mm-hmm. It was a bit tricky because I was
fabrics you used, I must just say.
Thank you. I was preparing for AFI Winter Collections, which was held in Cape and then postponed due to weather, I believe. And then this opportunity came and I parked that idea and said, now let me just continue with what I'm doing, which was the summer collection. So they were hints of both.
You know, if you make it back before the weekend, you might just get a slot in Fashion Week. If you heard that the whole Fashion Week was rescheduled because of the windy Cape Town.
Yeah, I heard. Mm. Yeah, so you know, it's a lot of hard work, and I mean, you just we do it for the photos, really, so that you create your catalog.
Exactly.
And then, we get see which looks get the most hits, interest, and then I kind of commercialize based on what is good and make it in an affordable price bracket for people.
Yeah, I noticed the dress. The full dress has been getting a lot of attention from my side, at least.
Yeah. You know what? With a time difference, I'm not paying much attention to social media.
But tell me, what inspired your collection?
You know, I was saying to people here, you know, my great-grandfather was Javanese, Indonesian. Ah. My great-grandmother, Scottish. My grandmother and father, my father's side, Indian, from Russian descent. So it's just a whole mishmash. Mm-hmm, and I love Oriental stuff. I love Eastern and I love African. And so, you know, it's just an explosion of color and texture. And that's really just...
And it fitted in so well, in that Asian market. It looked like it belonged there.
Yeah, completely.
Talking about mishmash, we also have the sisters, Wanda and Nazifa, who also have a mishmash of a cultural heritage. And most of their couture range had been influenced by your... But you've had how many... You've had the Salat range, which was the one that showcased on... which was more denims. And the Afghan materials, which was more embroidery, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you also had that stunning desert... a photo shoot, which I absolutely love, which also had, you could see the heritage of that signature in those designs. Yeah. And I'm not sure if you've come up with a recent one. I hadn't been following after that.
No, so we have been very busy for the past while, and we are looking to do an exclusive once-off piece couture range, also including the Afghan heritage. So we've basically created the Isalat that was showcased at SA Fashion Week to be the couture range for Modish. So it will be the Isalat range by Modish. Mm-hmm. So we will always do things that will showcase our Afghan heritage. And we're working on designs at the moment, which will be released later on this year, inshallah, because we have received more of the Afghan fabrics and terms and things that we will be including on that. So we really
I can't wait to see. I'm always, you know, quite fascinated by, you know, the inspiration that you draw from and the creation that comes out of that. Mm-hmm. And when I see the execution of both Bulya Threads and Mod Ish and what you produce at the end of the day, and we were talking about quality. I mean, to be on a runway, you're representing your brand.
Yeah.
And you're representing your workmanship and so many other things, but you're also representing a piece of yourself.
Yeah.
Like Taslim has mentioned, it's her hair, and you can clearly see that in all of her designs from the previous runway last year as well. I could see that was your signature, that is who you are. Yeah. And when I saw it on the Asian Fashion Week, it just you know, stood out there like the brightest shining star. It's our first episode in season 5. I have been on a break, yes, and that's what I naturally do after about, say, 13 episodes or so with you. But, you know, I so missed all of you, the designers, the consumers, those people who are interested in who that modest fashion or beauty or what makes a woman beautiful, and it's not only in her clothes, but it's what she projects from the inside as well. We are talking about the modest runway today, and that is with Mod Ish, Nazifa, and Warda Safi. And we also have on the line all the way from Asia, but heading home, I think, probably in the next few weeks. I don't know how long she wants to stay there. Taslim Bulbulya from Bulbulya Threads. Just looking at a report that was published by Salam Gateway, the Global Islamic Economy Gateway, who identified that over 1,000 manufacturers of apparel based in Muslim countries, 146 key modest fashion brands, and 85 e-commerce retailers, modest fashion represents a key subsegment of Muslim spending on clothing underpinned by Islamic religious obligations with requirements for both men and women. But the report also showed that female spending represents a larger market opportunity, accounting for 2/3 of a global apparel spending. And according to Muhammad Abdullah Al-Jarawi, sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly, who is the chairman of the Board of Dubai Islamic Economy Development Center, he said that the annual Muslim consumer spending exceeded $1.8 trillion. And then the Islamic banking assets hover at some $1.3 trillion and are expected to double in just 5 years from today. Now, I know, billions, trillions, that's not the usual language in my vocabulary. So it does sound like I'm playing Monopoly. I'm like, oh, you just another $1 trillion. But if we really, really think, it is huge. Next to halal food, it's halal fashion or Islamic fashion. And whenever I come across a lot of industry people or designers or people who don't quite understand the Islamic designs and what that requires, with the Islamic Fashion Design Council, I actually had people ask, you know, they have a problem with Islamic fashion and design being called Islamic fashion and design, and why could not be called modest fashion and design? And simply the answer is, I don't represent the consumer, I represent the designer. And when designers approach us, we need to have rules and regulations that guide them in terms of what an Islamic consumer deems fit as a modest wear garment. Because we know modest wear, a skirt can be to your knee.
Yes.
Where Islamically, it needs to be all the way to my ankle. And the same with covering of the head, or how high the collar needs to be, or the sleeves, or wearing a sheer garment that needs to be lined. So there's a whole lot of rules and regulations when it comes to Islamic fashion. So we stipulate that we are the Islamic Fashion and Design Council. And you can never control how a consumer wears a garment.
Never.
So I'm very clear on what Islamic Fashion Design Council is and what modest fashion is. Yeah. And although we will still promote modest fashion, because a lot of non-Islamic fashion, which still fits into the modest fashion sort of category, can still appeal to a Muslim consumer. But Taslim, how important is it, I think, with Fashion Weeks? It's, you know, people have also become so used to Fashion Weeks. Sometimes we also don't get all of the bias there, because Fashion Weeks have just become like there's a fashion week next week, yeah. Fashion week next month, there's a fashion week around the corner, someone's planning a fashion week. Exactly. But the main criteria or the, you know, element that a designer aims for when applying to or when going to showcase at a fashion week, what do you think that is for a designer? What is it that you look for when you need to, when you feel, okay, that's the right fashion week for me to showcase at?
I think, you know, as you said, I've been in this industry for way too long. South African Fashion Week, the AFI or SA Fashion Week, is not really targeted to buyers. SA Fashion Week does have a buyer's lounge, etc.
Yes.
But South African boutiques very rarely buy South African products. They'll take it on consignment. And it's not ideal for a designer. So the reason I did AFI, I've done SA Fashion Week many times in my previous labels, etc. I did AFI purely to bring in the direct consumer. So it was access to the market itself.
Yeah.
So there were no buyers. There were some media. I did get coverage. I did get tweeted all over. It was amazing because of all kind of instant. And it did grow my Instagram. And I have gotten many, many clients based on that. But I think in South Africa, unfortunately, we don't have the buying power. The independent boutiques don't buy independent South African design. And that is the biggest problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the Asia Islamic Fashion that I came to now, the emphasis was, yes, on the fashion week to draw a crowd, but there were also buyers, online store buyers, just independent boutiques. So here there are lots of independents who can buy your product. And I think that's still lacking in South Africa.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Roshan, you're interested, that's
what I'm always looking at ways of creating vehicles for designers, because I myself am not a trained designer. I'm a home-based, home-trained, by my dad.
Yeah.
And so
I think our biggest challenge is getting into retail. The most successful retailer, I think, for independence is Young Designers Emporium, and that doesn't necessarily appeal to a modest market.
But like Taslim was saying, and she was so right. Like, I mean, when we did the SA Fashion Week, we attended the buyer's lounge as well. And we were so, so excited. Because, I mean, she's been in the industry for 20 years.
Mm.
We've only been in the industry for 3 years. And we've only really appealed to basically the Muslim community. And we wanted to broaden that. So we were rather excited. Mm. And, I mean, they posted a list of over 140 buyers that were going to attend. But like Taslima said, It's poor, because they come there and they want to take things on consignment.
Mm.
And as a young designer, I've only been in the industry for 3 years. That's not really what we can afford right now. And I mean, SA Fashion Week, they're an amazing company. We love everyone who works there. But the whole aim and their whole model for all designers is to basically to commercialize, and also, which is not a bad thing to some sort, but I mean, 20 buyers can't be taking your things on consignment.
No.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to come to me and you're going to tell me, I love A, B, and C, no problem, you can buy A, B, and C, but they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
None of them want to. They want to take A, B, and C on consignment. And unfortunately, we can't afford to do that. And that's why we've turned personally a lot of people down, because we can't give out 200 garments on consignment.
Yeah. And big companies do that.
They're big companies.
Which is so surprising to us.
When you ask how payment's going to work in this technical, it's usually not on your terms.
Yeah.
Mm. It's on their terms. So we've turned a lot of people down. And a lot of people ask us, oh, so why don't you supply? That's the same reason why we don't supply.
Because many of our consumers don't know, you know, the nitty-gritty of what goes behind the scenes in getting into retail or even boutiques.
Yeah.
The other model as well is buying a rail. And that is what you mentioned with YDE. Mm. They do the whole the rail concept.
Yeah.
Does that work for designers?
I don't know. It depends on which store it is.
I was in YDE for 5 years, so I can say yes, it does work for designers. Mm. I also used to be in a space store, so I have had those kinds of commercial.
So I think it depends on your designs and whether it fits that market.
Yes.
So it's really about
and the
good match. A good match. It needs to be a good match and the price range.
Yeah.
Yes. Because then at least you know that it's your space.
Yes.
You are the actual. You know, but then I guess you get the marketing and everything that comes with it, as well as the sale.
Yes.
Because then those people will push for the sales of that specific line.
Yes, and
I think for independents like ourselves at the moment, because modest fashion is also relatively new, I think the way to market it or sell it is really with all these little trade shows. That we'll call them little trade shows.
From
like the Eat Fair or an Eat Festival or a pop up here or pop up there.
I'm all about the new way of thinking. And I would, you know, from an IFDC perspective, it's more about educating. And I think that's the lack that of education that comes from the retailers and boutiques. They don't quite understand the market. So I think it really, really boils down to educating media and marketers or retailers first so that they know. I don't even think they have these numbers. They don't know that it exists, and no one does research in terms of the modest wear customer, even though they see it. They don't quite, you know, understand who that consumer is, because we've been shopping at 10 different shops.
Having said that, Rashaan, Woolworths is very aware of its market.
No, they are, yes, but they won out of how many, you know? And I've always... they've always had a conservative collections within their stores as well. And then you look at, you know, the rest. I mean, that's just one store. And if I look overseas as well, Deb and Ham's have the Arb collection. And so you see these all slowly coming into the marketplace, and they are getting used to the fact that, or not even used to, aware of what the modest wear consumer needs are. Just looking at, you know, things that happen globally, I mentioned Anissa Hasibuan on the New York Fashion Week, the London Modernist Fashion Week, which was hosted by Horti Ilan, the Turkey's first international Islamic Fashion Week, which was held by Modernisa in collaboration with the Islamic Fashion Design Council, and then Africa Fashion Week Nigeria, who had a co-identity and Mama Bishara, I think last year, on their platform as well, which was a modest wear brand. And then we look at people, influencers. There are so many modest fashion influencers, and it's not about being out there and being a model or anything like that. I mean, okay, yes, we have Halima Aden, who wore her hijab at Miss Minnesota as a Miss Minnesota contestant, and then was casted as a model for a well-known American brand, and also walked the ramp for this brand as well. There's so many examples of what's happening globally, and these influencers are really pushing the modest wear as a collective, as a, you know, from all across the globe. And I've just got statistics on Tokyo now as well, in China. It's not, you know, cornered or fragmented to just one area. It is a global appeal. And if you look at ministers, royals, these are all people who need to represent themselves in a conservative fashion.
But like this Lima said earlier on also, modesty was always there. It was just never accessible to us. So I also think that social media has played a huge role in blowing this up. I mean, you get up, I mean, everyone knows Tina Tokyo. She's doing a whole lot of collaborations with other companies, but she's played a huge role in being very influential. And I mean, me and my sister loved her, but there's a lot of other, I mean, also H&M, when they ran their ad and they featured a Muslim girl in one of the ads, that blew up as well. So now Nike's apparently launching a sports cap for athletes that are Muslim.
They have a shoe now as well, the way you have to design it, and one of the designers is a Muslim designer. But I must just tell you that they did have a little bit of flack from the Middle East in terms of the promotion, because I think the promotion said something like "kiss my ears." But if you say really fast, it's not appropriate for a Muslim country to be saying "kiss my," you know what. So I mean, and this design, I think, is from Morocco or something, from one of the Muslim countries as well. And and he's been getting widespread, you know. Yes, we want that one. There's a lot of mainstream or brands, DKNY. There's so many, Dolce & Gabbana. So there's so many that have come on board. But I've always said, you know, they also need to collaborate with people who are currently doing it. Indonesia has had about like their fashion week has been going on for years, and they've received about hundreds of thousands of people that attend their fashion week because it's that big and it's on an international scale.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get as much exposure as your New York or your Paris fashion weeks. But we do need to close off. I do need some last words from you, Taslim. How long are you going to be in Asia? Is this trade fair still happening? Or are you just enjoying yourself now?
The trade show ended yesterday.
Okay.
So today was just my rest day, and tomorrow I'm going to Dubai, on my way back home. And I stopped over for a couple of days to see if there's any business essential there for me. So I think watch this space. I think that modest fashion is going to blow up. It already has, but I think there's just so much more that's going to happen.
Okay. It needs to
and
trickle back here to South Africa.
We
yeah.
as modern designers need to get together and assist each other.
Yes,
and
definitely.
You know, that's
definitely.
How we're going to make we're going to make waves in the industry.
Definitely.
In South Africa.
Inshallah. I'm into that. May Allah, inshallah, just, you know, open up that all those propositions that's going to come forward, inshallah, and make a success of your business too, inshallah. To our guests here in the studio, do you have any? You have like a minute, I think.
I think just to second what Taslim said is that watch the space.
Mm-hmm.
Modesty has been featured on the runway. Modesty has been featured on the shoulder with the shoulders meet up shoulders with mainstream fashion, and we're here to stay, and we're coming with the biggest force ever.
Yeah, we are. Watch this.
Let's work together. So inshallah, that is it for today's program of Cover Mode. I'm your host, Rashan Isaacs. Till next week, Monday, 1:10, do join me again as we invite Shanaz Musa back into the studio to talk about your inner self. Assalamu alaikum.